comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Well, we're here because you have a right to know and because you matter. Well, over the past 24 hours, our website went nuts, but it wasn't our website, actually. Some of you tried to get onto the website for the past 24 hours, and you had trouble. You couldn't get onto the website. The problem was that at about 2:30 this morning local time, the website went down, and it didn't come back up. I called our web hosting company, and they explained to me that they had a technician working on the server, and it should be back up in about 30 minutes. Well, in almost 24 hours, they got it back up. Anyway, it's up now. Some of you, those of you who are subscribers to the K-Files, of course, got an email from me stating the alternate address to go to in case this website was not back up. We do maintain a backup, an alternate emergency page where you can still go and listen to the show or watch the show if you're a member. Of course, it's always free to listen to the show. If you're a member, if you join our members community, then you get to watch the show. I mentioned the K-Files, so you know about that. If you're not a subscriber to the K-Files, that's our free weekly newsletter. And so just go over to my website. The website is kevinsmithshow.com. And you'll see it right in the middle of your screen. It says K-Files. Click that and subscribe, and you'll get an email with it. It's got a confirmation link in it you need to use to activate your subscription, and then you're good to go. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. Let me remind everybody, I want to meet you out at the Alchemy Event 2011. I'll be out there. I will be arriving on Saturday. I cannot arrive on Friday because I have to do the show Friday night here. But then on Saturday I'll be arriving and would love to meet and greet all of you. And that's going to be out in Los Angeles, West Los Angeles. You can click their banner on my website to get all of the information. On Sunday I'll be speaking, and then there will be a meet and greet in the afternoon. After I speak, we'll go to lunch, and during lunch, it's meet and greet. I want to meet you. You know, when I say you are important and you matter, it's not just a cliche. I really want to meet you. And so come on out to the Alchemy event. It will be November the 11th, 12th, and 13th out in Los Angeles. Again, click the banner on my website and take a look at everything that's going on. It's going to be a great event. If you are not a member of our members community, you can solve that tonight. You know, it costs a whopping 25 cents a day. That's it. And then you're a member in the members community of the number one UFO talk show on the planet for 25 cents a day. And you get to hang out with some of the coolest people on this planet in our members community. Plus, you get a lot of other stuff, too. Read that ad on my website. That's right, read. Lost art, but it's a good one. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Dr. Lewis Turi. This is not the first time he's been my guest, but then again, it is. A little confused? Well, let me explain. We tried before to have Dr. Turi on the show. This would have been probably 2006, maybe very early 2007. We tried twice, and there was just something weird with the telephones. At that time, I was broadcasting from the Phoenix area, and he is in the Phoenix area. And so we should have had no problem whatsoever, but we just had horrible, horrible problems with the telephones. Couldn't stay connected. They kept getting cut off. And when I mentioned that to him today, he said, well, it could be that it was back at a time when Mercury was in retrograde. And I said, well, yeah, it was. And as a matter of fact, he and I talked about it at the time. We could talk during the day before the show, but when we went on the air, we would get cut off. I will have to say that it was also a time when we were being interfered with on a daily basis. So, you know, there were a lot of things working against us back then, but he's with us tonight. Dr. Turi, let me welcome you to the, we'll say, your first appearance here on the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, first, let me thank you very much for having me as your guest tonight. And there are no accidents. You know, maybe during those days I was not as verbal or as knowledgeable as I am nowadays. You're talking about many, many years. So I definitely have improved my wisdom quite a lot since then.
Well, we are delighted to have you here. And for those of you who do not know Dr. Turi, you must be new to our genre. Dr. Turi is well known worldwide. Some people say he's sort of a modern day Nostradamus. He is a hypnotherapist. He is also gifted in I don't know what to call it, but astrological psychology, astropsychology.
That's correct. That is a mixture of the old science of astrology combined with modern psychology. However, my line of work, which is based on Nostradamus' 16th century methodology, has nothing to do with both. So I created a monster called astropsychology.
So what you're doing then is something that's rather unique. It's not something a lot of people are doing.
No. Put it this way. Following my last UFO experiences, I couldn't help myself to dig into Nostradamus' work. And this is why my work is very similar. I actually write quatrains. Of course, I add symbols, or I had keywords to be more precise, to help the people to understand. You have to remember that Nostradamus was born with Mercury, which is the communication process in the sign of Pisces, which is very fluid, very intuitive, very psychic. And that's why a lot of people still nowadays cannot relate to his expression. Mine is very different. I was born with Mercury in Aquarius, which is very intuitive but also logical, and I can dwell and deal into the superconscious in time and space and the archetypal realm of consciousness and translate the face and the tools of God through his creation.
All right, you know, you just mentioned that you had a UFO experience. Tell us about that.
Well, I had a series of UFO experiences. The first one, I was about, I believe, 6 or 7 years old. And I recall being punished and being thrown in the attic on a mattress. And during those days in 1956, the old house belonged to my grandfather, who had lost both of his legs on a German mine, and he didn't have any money to keep the house, one of the only house in the village who managed to stand up. So we didn't have electricity, we didn't have any running water, we didn't have any restroom, and my bedroom was the attic. I was very handful, and with eight brothers and sisters, very often I end up right up there. And one night, I felt something touching my feet, and you know, I thought it was a cat, because we had an army of cats, because the neighbor was a butcher, and he used to do the killing of all the animals right there, so all the cats and blood were running by the house. Literally, my favorite pastime was to kill the rats. And cats were attracted to these free meals. Very often, they used to end up in my bed, and they used to wake up in the morning with half of a rat eaten. But they were a very, very good source of heat for me, because I was very cold. We didn't have any electricity, as I said, no way of getting hot. The window was broken, and my grandpa could not change the glass. So the wind in the south of France, in Provence, is really, really cutting. It's called the Mistral. It's very hot and very, very cold in the Vallée du Rhône, as we say in French. And having a cat was, you know, being warm, literally. So I thought what was touching my feet was a cat. And, of course, I didn't want to lose the warmth I accumulate under this little blanket. And I kicked the cat like I did so many times before, so he would come up to the top of the bed and join me. The point is, I kicked and I kicked and I kicked again, and he never came up. So I thought, well, I have to go and grab him. And then when I sat and I looked at the bottom of my bed, oh my God, that tells you how shocked, petrified, literally, I was when I saw three things. And again, in 1956 or 57, we didn't have radio, no television, and nobody was there to tell me what was an ET or a gray or God knows what. So I freaked out, and I hid back, and I was there waiting to see what's going to be next. And trust me, I got hot really, really fast that night. and then I got courageous enough, and I glimpse out of the blankets, and one of them came. It was about 1 inch or 2 inches maximum for my face, and I passed out. So imagine that. The next day, when I woke up, screamed my head off. I mean, and my mother ran upstairs. What's going on? Because I couldn't get out anyway, because I was locked. I was locked in the attic. And I told her what I saw. And she says, honey, this is dreams. I says, Mom, that's not a dream. I saw three little monkeys with big eyes. I mean, that's all I could refer to. Nobody could explain that to me. And that lasted for years. And the good news is, each time I used to wake up in the morning safe and sound. So I got to somehow being forced to trust them. So that is my first UFO experience, and it's pretty dramatic, though.
Do you know, did they communicate anything to you over those years?
No. Oh, yeah, I mean, progressively more than that. They actually downloaded some information pertaining to the cosmic code and how the universe works, and where the moon is coming from, and all these very interesting things. But during my first abductions, if there were any communication, Kevin, I would not know. I did not know. The only thing I know is that they were there every single night, and to the point where I was screaming so loud that months after months, literally, that it affected my mind, literally. And at school, I was so bad, I couldn't do anything. I was talking about this all the time. They thought that I was, you know, mentally disturbed. So they tried to convince my mother to having me checked out, so to speak. But, you know, in 1956, you didn't have Prozac or Ritalin. The only thing you had to fix kids' brain was electric shock. And luckily for me, my mother was smart enough to realize that I might have something true here. And she didn't want me to undergo such treatment. And I guess I maintained my sanity since then. But no, no communication, not that I know, at least on that one.
When this happened when I think you said you were about 6 years old?
Correct.
And this went on for how long?
Oh, years. Until my stepfather kind of connected with my mother, and we had some argument, which I now understand due to his communication process being in opposition to mine through the stars. People can not relate to each other as easily sometimes. I'm sure you have encountered such a difficulty with some people. So when he started to connect with my mother, I became very very reluctant to listen to what he was saying to me, because I was literally raised by myself. I was in the street. I was looking for food in the trash. I was totally unruly. And when he started to try to put some discipline, I was thrown out of the house, literally. I was 14 years old when I was in the street.
Did you have any encounters with these extraterrestrial beings after you were thrown out into the streets?
Not right away. I have actually five UFOs experience altogether, and I don't count two or three occasions with my current wife where we were abducted from one block to the other one. That is normal. But the second one, let me remember, the second one took place, which was very, very dramatic. The second one, I felt really, really invaded. I'm still pissed off, to tell you the truth. Sometimes I find myself wondering what the hell happened that night and why me. I'm still upset. Once I left my home, I have all explained in my book, Beyond the Secret, we should be actually retitled From Hell to Heaven. But I end up in England, I was working, I was like 19 or 20 years old. I was working in the south of France in an English camp. And a friend of mine, we were dating a couple of English pretty girls. We were kids, we were young. And he ended up having a fight with one of the guy because he was messing up with his girlfriend, fell in love with him. To cut the story short, he was fired from the compound, and I kept my job. And then he told me at the end of the season, that would be around September, he says, I will come back, and we're going to go to London, and we're going to see those girls again. And that was it. Never in a million years would I ever dream that 3 months later or so, this guy was going to be right there waiting for me when I had my paycheck in my hand. But that's what you get when you deal with a Scorpio. You know, anytime you met somebody born in November, you could be sure your life is about to take a very serious change, something I didn't know, which I am now currently teaching my student. So we end up in England. And, of course, I left the south of France in September. It was nice and warm with a little T-shirt and a little short, my guitar, and enough money to pay for the train and then take the ferry to London. The next thing I know, I'm in Victoria Station in London, and then I'm surrounded by a bunch of people that I don't understand a single word they're saying. It's cold. It's wet. And where am I? Next thing, so I'm stuck in Victoria Station for about 2 or 3 months, playing guitar, trying to make a living. And of course, I didn't know that in the underground in London, Piccadilly Circus, that's where I used to go and sing, there is a mafia there. You're not supposed to go and sing French song in the English tube. Next thing I know, I'm fighting with a bunch of people. They throw my guitar under the train, whatever I had left, my clothes end up under the tram. So I was really, really desperate, and I had a couple of black eyes because I had four guys fighting me. So the next thing, I find myself totally destitute, and all I could do is to apply my will and to from morning to night, every single day under the rain, with no clothes, knocking every single door, every little restaurant, every breakfast, bed and breakfast, every hotel. Monsieur, madame, vous avez du travail pour moi, s'il vous plaît. What the hell are you talking about? They had no idea that I was asking for a job. And then one day, I managed to squeeze some money, because I was begging for my life, literally. And I went shopping. And I think I had 6p during those days, 6 English cents. And I went to a little shop, and I picked up the cheapest tin I could find. And then I took that with me, ran back to Victoria Station. That was my home, literally. And opened it with my knife and ate it. It was pretty chunky. And then I looked my English dictionary book, and I learned my two first words, dog food. That's to tell you where I started. Then from there, I made my way all the way up. I end up being a manager of a saloon bar in a 5-star hotel. I mean, I'm skipping a tremendous amount of information. And as I teach my students, you know, incredible people, incredible experiences breed incredible people that have incredible gift to share. And then I end up at the Royal School of Music. And then from there, I graduated from the Royal School of Music at the Audrey Weekend School of Music in Eastbourne in Sussex in front of 400 students. And I recall my teacher saying to me, oh my gosh, during those days, I was 26 years old. And she says, there's no way you're going to play Mozart or Beethoven because you have to be raised with a piano to be able to play classical music. I took that so personally. Oh my gosh. And instead of like all the other rich kids who were living at the Royal School of Music, instead of smoking pot, messing up with the girls, I was banging this keyboard, doing my arpeggio, like, you know, 8 hours a day. And then I graduated in front of everybody. And I got it. I won the Distinction Cup. Then that's where my second UFO experience was about to take place, because I was very happy and I went back home. I went back home and that was the third experience. Let's go back.
Well, okay, tell you what. We have to step away for break. And we'll pick up right there when we come back from this break, all right? You see, folks, I told you. Dr. Turi is well known all over the world, and you're learning, if this is your first time to hear him, you're learning why he's well known all over the world. We are going to step away for a break here in, about 10 seconds or less, and we'll only be gone for a couple of minutes. During that couple of minutes, if you're not a member, be sure you join. 25 cents a day, and we give you the first 7 days free.
To the Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And if you joined during that break and you're trying to figure out how to watch this show live, what you need to do is what the instructions say to do after you log in, and that is be sure you read the new member info file. So you log in, you see over there those links on the left, you see where it says new member info, click that. All will become clear. We are talking with Dr. Lewis Turi, and Dr. Turi, when we went away, you were just about to tell us about your second UFO experience.
All right, thank you. And putting up with me, I've got so many crazy adventures. The point is that I lived about 11 years in the UK, and I came back home a few times in between. So the first time I came back, it was a Sunday, and I was very happy to see my mom and to see my family. But my older sister was not there, my sister Noelle. So I asked my mom, where is she? And she goes, oh, she just left and she's going to work. She's got to take the bus and the bus going to take her to, and that during those days she was working, I think, as a trainee nurse in the mountain, somewhere about 100 miles or so away from the little village where we live. And that was it. So I was upset because I knew I would not see her. I could only stay 2 or 3 days. So, and she was usually gone for the rest of the week. So, all of a sudden, there she is. She was all upset and crying, and she goes, oh, I missed the bus. Oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? And my mom says, well, don't worry. Louis is going to give you a ride. I think it was about 19 or 20 years old when this happened. Well, I took the car, and we went. The only problem is, I don't know if you know what the south of France looks like, but it's like Gruyère, French cheese. It's so small, and it's like insane to find directions. And of course, I never look at what a map is all about. And we didn't have GPS during those days. So let's cut the story short. It's about 4:30 in the morning. I make exhausted. I'm trying to keep my eyes open, and I'm desperate for a cup of coffee. And of course, Noel is sleeping next to me. I'm trying to keep this car on the road because I'm pretty high in the mountain, and the road is very icy. And finally, I can see a light in the bottom of a little valley, and I was kind of surprised. I said, "What is this light?" So anyway, I made my way to that little auberge, and to this day, I just cannot understand how, in the middle of the French mountain, how a little auberge would be open in the middle of the night. And it's not like if you have McDonald's 24-hour services in the south of France during those days. So I recall very, very clearly, Kevin, to park, and that was it. There was only me there. You could only park 2 or 3 cars. It was such a small little place. And I wake my sister, Noelle, and I said, okay, Noelle, I'm going to find some direction and get a cup of coffee. And I'm very protective of my little sister, so as soon as I walk in, I got her to sit by the door on the right there, and she immediately went back to sleep, poor thing. But not before I asked her what she wanted to drink, which she answers, "I want a Coca-Cola." I still wonder, it's freezing cold outside, and she's asking for a Coca-Cola. Women, literally. Anyway, so I went straight to the bar, and as I walked to the bar, I saw 3 guys. Now, understand that those guys were huge. I mean, huge. In my mind, I thought they were loggers. Anyway, and as I spoke to the barman, I asked for a Coca-Cola and then for a coffee. He gave me the Coca-Cola right away. I brought it to my sister. I then went back to the bar, and I was looking at this 3 guys. They were like faceless. They were like frozen. They were like looking straight in front of them and not moving, like if they were like robots. Then I was kind of wondering, oh my gosh, I hope they have good intention, because I'm from the street. I can take care of myself and protect my sister, but any one of these guys would kill me. Jeez, my gosh, it's so big. To the point where actually my nose was at the belt of the guy that I was standing next to. Imagine that. They would have made one of the top American football players look like a child. It was so big. Anyway, and then the one that I was next to me turned around. It was on my left side. He turned around, and I look up, and he look at me, and he goes, "Do you want to play cards?" I look at him, and I says, "No, really, my friend. I'm very tired. I just want to get some direction, get a cup of coffee, and take my sister to the hospital, wherever she works." And he look at me, and he says, "Oh, you are going to be friends with cards for the rest of your life." And to these days, I do not know how to play poker. I do not know how to play 21. Never. The only card I play, and which are all a winner hand, is the tarot. So he looked at me and he goes, pick up a card. He had this deck of cards in his hand. So, you know, while he was big and I was tired and I didn't know his intention, so I said, let's do it. So I pull a card. And as soon as my eyes look at the card, he looked at me and he was telling me what the card was. And that was interesting. I said, in my mind, you know, it's interesting. He said, pick another one. And then another one. And another one. It is like a 3 or 4 time. And then I thought, oh my gosh, how does he do that? It's an interesting game. And then he does it again. And in my mind, I thought, okay, I am going to change the Queen of Spades for the Nine of Diamonds. I would never ever forget that. Ever, for as long as I live. That was my mind, me talking to me, Kevin. He looked at me and he says, Louis, and I never introduced myself to him. You are not going to change the Queen of Spades for the Nine of Diamonds. Oh my God. I freaked out. I was all into the bar because at the same time, I felt like if somebody was sticking a screwdriver from one side of my temple to the other one. And I was there trying to hold my balance, and I asked the barman, where is the restroom, please? And he goes, right here. It was a very small place. The door of the bathroom was open. I went straight there. I don't know how I managed to go to that bathroom. I opened the cold water, put that all over my face because I didn't want to pass out. And I was connected to this guy in my head. It's like my head was still over there and I was in the bathroom 5-10 feet away. Then I thought, oh my gosh, I don't care who the hell you are. I don't know where the F you come from, excuse my French. You are going to give me some serious explanation here and you better do it. And I walked straight out. And you know what? I must have stayed in this bathroom, I don't know, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, top, because I wanted to have an explanation. And by the time I walk out, they were gone. So I look at the barman and I say, where are they? They just walked out. So I ran out, making sure my sister was safe and she was still asleep, sound asleep. And I look outside both sides. I don't hear nothing. I don't see nothing. From the outside, I went back in and I screamed to the barman. I said, who are those guys? How did they get here? He says, hey, they must have driven like you did. I said, there's no car when I came here. The next thing I know, I don't remember. That's one thing I don't remember, if I ever paid the barman. The next thing I know, I wake my sister up and I said, let's get the hell out of here, sis, right now. She was confused. You know what happened? The Coca-Cola was on the table still. She didn't touch it. I grabbed her hand, dragged her to the car, opened the car. I didn't even lock the car. You don't lock the car in the south of France during those days. There's no crimes. Mm-hmm. I literally throw her in the car, and I drive off. Now listen to this. And trust me, Kevin, I have better thing to do than to lie or make up stories. Okay? The only thing I remember, It's about 10 o'clock the next day. I'm driving back home. What the hell have I been? All night? What happened to me? Did these guys finish something that started when I was a kid? And most of all, that's where I'm really pissed off. Okay? They left me with a headache that I would never, ever wish on my worst enemy for about a month or month and a half. I thought I was going to be going insane. The migraine headache I had, and I never had headache before that or even after that, occasionally, you know, when I used to smoke, okay? But no, like that. And then since then, that very specific experience really made me aware how powerless I was, how these things, this which I believe were the Nordics, because I saw them afterwards in my last abduction above Los Angeles. In August 11, 2001, the dates you don't forget. I felt so powerless, and I had no answer. about anything that happened to me. They made me think of what I've seen when I was a kid, and then for a while I was not running properly, but I thought I still have to go back to England. I still have to cut records, because during these days CDs and DVD did not exist. I still have to go back with my musicians, and I did. And I got a deal with Phonogram, Philips Record Company, and they sold over 50,000 copies of my first record all over Europe. So I was very, very proud. And this is when my brother, who owns a discotheque in the south of France, told me, next time you come down to visit the family, why don't you come to my discotheque and we can play your music and this and that. And that leads me, of course, to my third UFO experience.
All right, I have a question for you regarding this second one. Did you, well, actually, both the first and the second, did you, in either one of these experiences, did you see a craft, a UFO, or just the extraterrestrials?
No, I didn't see a craft. When I was 6 years old, I didn't see a craft on the second experience. But who knows, maybe the entire scenery was a craft. I have no idea. But I didn't see a craft. Meantime, on the next one, oh, did I see a craft? Oh, did I?
All right, before we get into that, I don't want to get too far away from something you said about your first experience. You said that they downloaded information to you.
No, I don't know what they did. I was only 6 years old. The second experience, I don't know what they did either. It's at the fourth experience that I realized what happened to me. Not only because the physical interaction with extraterrestrials in the flying saucer, but because I have been regressed by two top hypnotherapists in Victorville in California, and all was taped.
Okay, but what you did say is that one of the things that was downloaded to you was information like, where did the moon come from?
Oh, yeah, that was my last one.
Okay.
That was following the August 11, 2001 abduction. Not before that. Before that, I was just victim.
Mm-hmm.
I had no awareness, no idea. I was just being manipulated by extraterrestrials. And I think it started when I was that young. The second meeting, your guess is as good as mine. I believe they did something to my head. I have no idea.
Okay. Dr. Turi, we have to step away for break. It's going to take over here in about 5 seconds. And we'll pick up with your third UFO experience, or the next one that you're going to tell us about. Right after this, ladies and gentlemen, we shall return, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Dr. I'm saying Lewis, but we'll ask him in a moment. It may be Louis, because that would be the French pronunciation. Turi. On the screen, for those who are watching our TV channel, you can see the same picture that's on our website. And that picture is from Dr. Turi's own website. So you can click on that picture on my website. You can click on that picture. It will take you to his website, and we will get him to tell us, for those of you who are perhaps not looking on our TV channel and you're not on my website, you're just listening. Dr. Turi, what is the web address for your site?
Well, DrTuri.com is very simple, www.drturi.com. And when you get there, on the left up corner, you will see the old thedrjerry.com, and you want to click there and download the two free books that I'm offering your audience, Kevin.
Oh, fantastic. Two free books. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there you go, folks. You want to be sure and visit the website and do what Dr. Turi just said. Now, let me ask you, is it Louis or Louis?
Actually, it is Louis. Like we say Paris, we don't say Paris. Mm-hmm. But it shows a very strong sense of perfectionism or a lot of Virgo in your own UCI.
Okay, so it's Dr. Louis Turi. Mm-hmm. And I apologize for using the American pronunciation of that. Now, you were just about to tell us, you said in the next experience that you had with UFOs, the next encounter, you did see a craft, and you were about to tell us about that when we had to go to break.
All right. Yeah, first of all, I have to emphasize, Kevin, that going under such a dramatic UFO experience is a very personal type of experience. So I do understand when people are skeptical about all that I'm saying, because they could think, I'm trying to write a book for a movie in Hollywood. The only thing is I'm a true actor, and these things were very real. It's not a light, it's not a walking, it's not something here. What happened next is very, very solid. So that's I finally got myself a deal with Philip Record Company, and my brother owned, during those days, a big discotheque in the south of France, including hotels and restaurants. He's kind of mafioso type of guy, a Scorpio guy, you know. Mm-hmm. The king of the family. Everybody respects Joe because he has the money, he has the power, he has the discotheque, and God knows what. This is our Sicilian background, I guess. So he told me, come to the discotheque, and we'll play your disc. Your records. Again, we did not have CDs during those days. And Joe, during those days, in 1981. I can be very precise because I would never forget the dates. November 11, 1981. The other date was August 11, 2001. So you could see the pattern, pretty obvious. The two other ones, I didn't really notice it because I didn't understand yet the importance of who I was going to be and my missions and all that transpired since then. So I couldn't care less. I was just a victim. Things have changed after that. So, as I said, he used to live in a big farm in the south of France. And at the beginning, what we do in the south, we live upside down when you have this type of life. We sleep all day, and we usually spend all night up, music, you know, dancing and all the good stuff that you do. And in the morning, after everything is said and done, 8 or 9 o'clock, you're having your breakfast and you got to sleep and you do it again and again. And I did that for about 2 weeks. All I was doing during the day is maybe ride one of his horses or, you know, go out with his big, huge dogs and just relax. I was away from the village in a farm. And it was surrounded with vineyards. And that night, that very specific night, I had an intuition to pick up my camera with me. I had that little voice telling me, get your camera tonight. Out of the blue. Of course, I didn't. But it was November. It was cold. 1981, as I said. And I have those dates well printed in my books. They didn't change, and they would never change. And like every single night, just before 10 o'clock, we drove. And during those days, he had a brand new Mercedes, very reliable machine. I had one of those, a very reliable machine. And we were driving through the vineyards. And we take off 10 o'clock. It takes about 1 hour to go from the farm to the discotheque. But we have to drive first through some vineyards until we get to the main road and then the highway to the city where the discotheque was. So as we did so many times before, he's driving his Mercedes. I am at the passenger side, and there I am, half asleep, you know, anticipating the night. And then that night, I saw some light on the right side of the passenger side. And what attracted my attention is that those lights were not, they were not there any other night, first of all. Secondly, they were moving. It was not like there was a tractor or a car far away reflecting the headlights. And then I told my brother, I said, Joe, do you see that? What is that? And my brother, you know, typical mafioso, typical Scorpio, oh, Louis, shut up. There's nothing there, you know. And I'm glad this happened with this guy because he got his wake-up call, but with 4x4, to tell you the truth. He really woke up. This guy doesn't believe in God, doesn't believe in spirit, doesn't believe in UFO. Did he wake up that night? Big time. Anyway, so, and I asked him, I said, Joe, is there people working at night in here? And then he goes, again, typical sarcasm, typical Scorpio sarcasm. He goes, Louis, it's November. Grapes are picked up in September. In other words, shut down, you know, shut up, and then let me drive. So he drove, and those lights were getting closer and closer to us. And God's the time, and God's the moment, the magic moment, where, all of a sudden, a brand new Mercedes in the middle of the road stopped, dead. And above us, an immense, immense light coming on top of us. Now, him and I, we are looking through the windshield. Whoever knows how they are trying to make sense of what's happening. I thought it was a helicopter. But I fly helicopters. And helicopters make the floppy noise. You know,
right.
And then they have the dam wash. And then nothing of this nature. There was no sound. There was no dust pulling all over the place. So I said to my brother, I'm going to go out and look. And that's where you see the big brother is supposed to protect me. He grabbed my hand. He said, what the hell are you doing? You're crazy. Stay in the car. I managed to get away from his grab. And I opened the door, and I went outside. And I look above. I couldn't see nothing. I was literally blinded by the light. That's the case. And I could not figure out what that was. And then that tells me there were intelligence flying that saucer, which I did not know yet was a flying saucer. They turned the light off. All the light under the flying saucer were dimmed. And only in the middle, you had like a yellowish, reddish, goldish type of light that came and go all over the car. And maybe 20 or 30 feet around the car in the middle of the vineyard, on the middle of that little road, in the middle of nowhere. You know, like you see in a movie, apart from that it is real. Okay, then it took me about, I don't know how long it took me, a while for my eyes to adapt, and of a sudden, I can see it. I can see it as clear as you would see anything above my head, 30 feet probably, maximum, 30 feet. It's nothing. I could have jumped and touched that thing. There was a flying saucer. I was banging the front of the car. I was screaming every bad French words that was ever created, begging my brother to go out and to look at the flying saucer. Of course, he did not. Okay? And then I was just totally amazed. Now.
Okay, we have to step away for break. Pick up right there. You were banging on the car trying to get him to step out. But we'll pick up right there when we come back from this break. Ladies and gentlemen, don't go away because we got more of this amazing and exciting story right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm delighted that you are here. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from the first hour. My guest this evening is Dr. Louis Touri, and he is, he's very well known around the world, in the world of UFOs, paranormal, consciousness. But he's telling us quite amazing story about an encounter that he had with a UFO. This is not his only encounter. This is his third or fourth encounter with a UFO that he's telling us about. But, Dr. Turi, when we went away for break, you were outside the car. You had seen this UFO above the car. The car is dead in the road, and you're banging on the car trying to get your brother to come out and look at it. And then we had to go to break.
Exactly. Now, of course, my brother was petrified and never came out of the car. So, which I understand, because I was a little bit crazy myself. I had no idea. I was very innocent. So one thing is sure, a lot of people out there talk about UFOs. They write about UFOs. never been close to UFO or see a UFO, which I understand. But what I'm trying to tell you is, I never asked for that. My two previous experiences, I was more of a victim. But when you actually see on your own eyes a UFO, a flying saucer, and to make sure you maintain your sanity, your own brother, extraordinarily skeptical, is there witnessing the incredible. I tell you what, your entire conception of life and reality really changes. So, what happened next?
Okay, let me ask you this now. Were you afraid during this event? Were you scared?
No, I had no idea. And I had no idea was up that I had a freaking flying saucer 30 feet above my head also. I had no idea. Why should I be afraid?
What about your brother?
This is why when people says if you get too close to the flying saucer, you're going to fry. That's not true. Because it was making a very heavy humming noise. That was the type of noise it was making. But I wasn't cooked. I was not microwaved. So that's a wrong assumption when people tell you that. Because I have been very close and inside of the flying saucer, and I've never been cooked.
But okay, well, what about your brother now? He was afraid, right? He was afraid to get out of the car.
Indeed, because he's much more cautious than I am, being the older brother to start with. A while after that, and this is where I realized they were intelligent beings on the flying saucer, is that they turned the lights on. And that motionless, huge, humongous flying saucer suspended above the head, okay? By miracle, I don't know how the hell that thing was standing there. It just took off. And it took off, maybe it flew about 5 or 6 feet above a chimney of the farm that was next door. I kept looking at it with all the light going on. Then I went back inside of the car. My brother's face was down the floor. It was all white. And you know what he says to me?
What?
He says to me, Louis, this didn't happen. You cannot say a word of what happened. I thought I was going to smack him right there. Because, you know, he says, people are going to think we're stupid, we are crazy. We cannot say a word to what happened tonight. It did not happen. And you better listen. Okay, now listen to this. We drove to the discotheque. Usually, when we arrive at the discotheque, there is a staff going on there. There is maybe a few groupies, and you know, we open in the doors. When we arrive, the discotheque was in full motion. Okay, there is a lapse of time that disappears again. Now, only listen to this again. I never ever seen my brother either smoking or drinking. To this day, that was the only night. I was at the end of the bar. He was at the end of the bar. We were looking at each other's, and we were smoking and swallowing whiskey like there is no tomorrow.
How much time had passed?
I don't know, but I was in shock. You don't seem to realize when if you go into something like this, Kevin, you have your entire being is being changed. You don't even think of time because time disappears. You don't know. You don't even think of you don't have no more common sense. It's not you anymore. You have been on auto drive for a while, and you're coming back. Mm-hmm. I can't explain. I don't have words to explain how I felt. The only thing I can tell you is that it's very, very weird. Very, very weird. And the next day, my mother calls me. And she goes, Louis, is your brother all right? I said, what do you mean? He already told my brother, my mom. He has a very, very strong connection with my mom. Mm-hmm. And he told her what happened that night. And for your information, you can go on the internet when you have a chance. And you can type the date of November 11, 1981 in the south of France. And I am not the only one who's seen that thing. Thousands of people have seen it in the south of France. But I don't know if they've been abducted. As far as I'm concerned, we were. So when this happened to me, I realized maybe there is more in my life than into singing, cat record, and God knows what. Everything changed in my mind. Everything changed. I worked three jobs. I managed to get enough money to pay for my plane ticket. And I arrived in the United States in April 1984 with $50 in my pocket. No friends, no place to stay, no green card, no social security. I was homeless. What the hell happened to me? Why did I do that? And that is things that I can't answer. The only thing I know, I was about to, maybe a few years later, in August 11, 2001, I was going to go through the most incredible experience as far as UFOs and flying saucers and extraterrestrial is concerned, because they left me with a legacy. As I said earlier, there is so many people out there, big names on the UFO phenomenon, big names. They have nothing, no legacy, no proof. And it's understandable. They cannot give you a toy or a tool because the antimatter would not agree with that. But they can give you spiritual gifts. That's what they left me with, was an unarguable ability, which I have done over and over again on coast to coast to make predictions. Well dated, well documented, and unarguable. And that is the legacy they left me with.
And this happened on August the 11th, 2001. What happened in that event?
Well, put it this way. When I came in the United States, I had my life in a suitcase, literally. And I had my master tapes. I had all my musical records. Then I went to EMI in Los Angeles. I played them my music, and they were all excited. They wanted me to bring the band from London, and they wanted me to get into the music. Again, I had it all made. I turned it down. I said, what the hell did I do that to start with? Why did I go back into this music knowing that it's something much bigger, more important that I have to do for humanity than just to sing and dance to make a bunch of pothead happy? I don't know. This was my philosophy. So I end up getting married. And I told my first wife, Brigitte, I said, you know, honey, a lot of interesting things happened to me. And being with me, chances are you will have to undergo this type of experience. So I'm preparing you for the incredible. And, of course, she never, you know, really gave me any second thought about it. And that was it, of course, until it happened. So it is now... let's go back in time. It is August 10, 2001. And my wife, Bridget, extraordinarily beautiful girl, always wanted to be involved into modeling, very attractive woman. For some reason, they tend to attract pretty girls as whites, including my current wife, Terania. So the night before... we received an invitation to go to, I think it was Catella exit near Disneyland at the Hilton. She was supposed to have a beauty pageant there, and I seriously recommended her to, you know, to go to bed early so she could have a beauty sleep and win the contest the next day. That was it. So we actually went to bed much earlier than usual. And then, again, the same old story. In the middle of the night, my wife just became berserk. I thought I was going to call 911 because I never ever seen her in such a mental state. She was crying. She was in a fetal position on the floor. She was upset. She made me look under the bed. She made me look in every cupboard. She was saying there's something in the house. I don't know what happened. I'm not sure there's something here. And I said, honey, it's just imagination. You'll be fine. Don't you worry. Everything will be cool. And of course, when the clock rang the next day at 6 o'clock in the morning, I told her there's no point of going to LA. She says, "Yeah, let's go. I still want to go. We can always go and see grandma if we cannot go there." So anyway, so I said okay. So I'm very very timing like. You know, I'm very fussy. I need to, when I plan, for example, to go to the lake and take my speedboat, I said to my wife, you know, we have to leave at 11 o'clock because I know exactly it's going to take an hour for me and you as we enter the hammer until I unhook the boats in the lake. It'll be exactly 60 minutes and we are on the way. So I'm very fanatical with time. So I knew when I fill up my car, okay, in the morning of August 11, 2001, it was 8 o'clock in the morning. That I know as a fact. Filled up my tank. My wife didn't say nothing. And I drove all the way down to High Five. Okay. And I took a right and north on the way to Los Angeles. And I was driving with her. Then I was kind of reluctant to ask her, about how she feels, what happened the night before. I tried to avoid a conversation, and then I had the radio on. And then I turned the volume down, and I tried to engage my wife to tell me, you know, what was going on, because who knows, maybe she became schizophrenic and she might do that anywhere else. So I was kind of concerned. Anyway, then she says, "I don't know, honey. I just don't know. I felt something was very wrong." And obviously she's very, very psychic because, by the way, she never came back to the house. So she felt something was wrong. So the last thing I remember is turning the radio off and driving through Jean Beret Bridge. There is a sign on High Five. It's called Jean Beret. I don't know if you ever took that. Well, you probably did. If you live in San Diego and you go to L.A., you will see that big, huge sign, Jean Beret. That's the last thing I remember, Kevin. I was driving under this bridge. I saw the sign, and then I didn't feel the wheel in the car, and we drove into like a cloud, and I thought, well, that's marine layer. That's not unusual, along the coast of California. That didn't make no much thing about it. The next thing I know, my wife is screaming her head off. She, "Honey, pick up your speed. What are you doing? Get on the lane." I was in the middle of the highway at 35 miles per hour on this speed bump thing, telling me that I had to get on my lane. I said, "What the hell happened to me?" Well, never do that. I've been driving forever. Okay? Mm-hmm. Never, ever. So next thing I know, I'm saying to her, "Bridget, listen, honey, I don't know where we are. I don't recognize anything. I'm going to get out." And she got upset at me. She said, "You're going to make me late or what? I didn't see the sign of Los Angeles yet. Keep going." I said to her, no, something is wrong. So I took the first exit, okay? And I recall very well landing on a big, huge parking lot. I drove straight to a white Toyota truck, on the back of this white Toyota truck. It's frozen in my mind, okay? I saw three Mexican guys eating their sandwiches. So I went straight to them and said, "Excuse me, where am I?" The guy looked at each other and they said, "This guy is tonto de la cabeza, he's crazy." And then he tell me, "You are at the Glendale exit after Los Angeles on the zoo parking lot." I said, "Okay." I had no idea where I was. I had no idea. I said, "What's the time?" He looked at his watch and it said, "It's 9 o'clock. Okay. Okay, all right. So I tried to get my composture. I went back to the car. I said, thank you. I sat in the car and I said to my wife, I said, Bridget, do you remember when I told you about UFOs and abduction and things like that? She says, oh, this again. No, please. I said, honey, we are after Los Angeles and it's 9 o'clock in the morning. And then she goes, okay, next time I go through Los Angeles and I don't see it, you let me know. And she was so confused, poor thing. She opened the glove compartment and I always have the map of the United States in there. She opened the glove compartment and was looking for grandma's house on the United States map to tell you how confused she was. Now, if there is no cops to stop me driving at 150 miles per hour and if there is no traffic from Oceanside to north of LA, I could have done that. Now imagine that. Imagine that. I was so confused. She was so confused. It took us over an hour and a half to go back to where we're supposed to be, to Catella exit. That's what I had written down. And then to the Hilton. And guess what? I was just, I don't know, maybe half an hour, three quarter of an hour from home. I rented a room at a hotel. I rented a room at a hotel because my wife didn't want to go back, trying to put some sense into her head. She called her best friend, and her mother lives in Phoenix. She came and picked her up, and my wife took off to Phoenix, and that was it. And then I thought, what's going on? Of course, it's understandable because she was pregnant, and the fetus, the baby, everything is gone. I mean, you're talking about things that is enough to shock a horse here. And then I had to go through these type of things. And then this is when I begin to think, okay, well, wait a minute here. What's going on here? Oh, actually, it's not 2001. I'm sorry, it's 1991. I'm 62 years old. I tend to lose it a little bit. The second experience was November 11, 1981. The second experience was my the third experience. The last experience with my wife was August 11, 1991. This is when I started my career. Mm-hmm. And I take that as a point of reference because I had no idea about UFO. I had no idea that I was going to be going on the speaking engagement. I was just so confused. And I talked to a friend of mine, and he says, you know what? There is a guy. His name is Sean Atlantin. He does these things about UFO, and he can give you some information. So anyway, I land on this guy. The next day, this guy came with his recording equipment, and my wife and I, my wife was gone, but I was there to talk. I was there to talk about all these things in great detail. It was just incredible, and I have everything fresh from the next day on tape. Then he decided, he understood there was something very, very abnormal when I told him the rest of the story, which he didn't know. And that's where he set up this regression with those top psychotherapists and hypnotherapists that are during those days were living in Victorville in California that he knew personally. And they had all television equipment, they had everything, and I'd never been hypnotized before. I didn't even know what was to be hypnotized. So I went with it. And then some of them wanted to give me a sodium pantothal. I had no idea. I said, okay. Luckily for me, I had somebody that was a doctor, and he stopped me. He says, no way. You ain't going to have sodium pantothal unless I am with you right there. Okay. So I had no idea. I was so innocent, literally. And what happened is they had one camera on my face, another camera on the two doctors, and another camera taking the full shot. That was just for editing purpose, I guess. And I guess what? I do have this tape with me. I do have that. So what they did, they froze the first frame, and I don't know how long, an hour and a half later, they froze the last frame. And they compare those two frames on both screens. And they said, you know what, Dr. Turi? No, I was not Dr. Turi then. I didn't get my doctorate from the Light Institute in California yet. They said, you know what, Louis? You actually work very much under, because not a single move, only water, literally water pouring on my face when I was complaining being inside of the contamination room inside of the flying saucer. So if you want me to elaborate, I can go and explain what happened next.
Yes, we've got about 3.5 minutes here before we go to break, so please go ahead.
We should be able to do that, yes. Okay, under regression, okay, the car was sucked into the belly of the flying saucer, and my wife was panicking, and I was telling her, don't worry, honey, everything will be fine, been there, done that. And then those three guys, okay, two of them actually, the third one stayed by the door. The two guys came and opened my door. They guide me. I knew exactly what I had to do. I just had to follow them. I didn't have any fears or whatsoever as I was explaining what's going on. And I followed them to a door. And I didn't see my wife after that. I enter that little room. And as soon as I enter the little room, I look at the little window, and I saw the earth the size of a football. That'll tell you how far I was, or how high I was, for that matter, because I saw the earth that like the size of a football. Now, I was pretty small. God thank they sent me north, not west, because I would have been swimming. You look at it, you know, in the ocean. So what happened is I have to be there because they have to do something to me. And that's where I complained, being very hot. And you could see on the camera, I'm literally sweating like somebody's pouring water on my face. Then I know it's time for me to go. And the door, there is a door that opens, sliding door that opens, and I go inside of the belly of the saucer. Then I see the gray working all the technology, all the computers, and looking at this big screen. I see all the what you call the Nordics, or the tall blonde, those three guys was there too. It's like the management. They were there just watching, looking at everything, supervising everything. And then looking for my wife. I know exactly where she is on the screen. So I go to an area and I'm looking at her. She's laying down on a glass table and they are cutting her. Incidentally, when I met my wife afterwards, above the airline, she has a 2 inches cut, but not cut like with a knife. It's cut in a zigzag, like I can't explain, but it wasn't there before. And she's the one who noticed it first and made me aware of it. Okay? And then I can see them taking the womb, okay? And then I was not upset. It's like I had an agreement or something. I was just looking at it like if you were watching a movie. I was not even emotional about it, okay? And then I understood afterwards why I was not emotional. I will approach that maybe later. So I know now it's time for me to come here for the main reason why all this happened. I go to another room. Okay, the door slides behind me. I sat on a chair. There is nothing that restrained me whatsoever. And there is like a helmet coming down the ceiling of the flying saucer. And it ends up at the base of my nose, covering my eyes. It's like a helmet. That's all I can tell you. Okay. And then all of a sudden, I felt a mixture of electricity, concrete, steel, light, gold, name it. I was imploding. I was imploding. I fell from a fraction of a second that I was directly connected with all, and all is that, and that is all. These are the only words I have to tell. There's no other word in English language to explain it. I was like one block with God, put it this way. And then the next thing I know, I am driving at 35 miles per hour and I end up.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back. Ladies and gentlemen, when we come back in this next segment, I will open the telephone lines for you. All right, more with Dr. Turi right after this.
Oh, this is vague as Gary. Listen, we got aliens here taking all our money, and the people that come into this town, they leave broke. I need you to investigate them. Call me. Hey, 70. If they haven't got me yet, please help me. See you, Kevin.
We do get all kinds. We're talking with Dr. Turi, and the telephone lines are open at 623-444-5889. If you have a question or a comment for Dr. Turi, that's the number to call. Again, 623-444-5889. For those of you who are not in the USA and you're not in Canada, we do realize it can be expensive to call internationally from some places in the world. So, if you wish to participate in the show, have a couple of options. One, you can call us using Skype. If you have that feature where you can call phone numbers, just make sure that you have a caller ID set up in Skype and it'll work. If you don't want to do that, you can use the flash message option on our website. Again, that's for people not in the USA, not in Canada. If you are in the USA or Canada, you need to use your telephone number. This will be the only announcement I make about it. We won't beg you to call. If you wish to call, you may do so. The lines are open. And again, 623-444-5889. Dr. Turi, you were saying that you had observed that they were doing some kind of medical work on your wife aboard this UFO, and then you went into another room, and what happened?
Well, basically, this is where they downloaded the entire cosmic codes. They made me understand the downloading. It's like I couldn't stop reading material on Nostradamus, and I went in my apartment and I painted every door, every wall, the ceiling. I painted everything with UFOs, with astrological symbols. I mean, I couldn't help myself. I had something that needed to get out, and then I started to get involved into metaphysics and literally drop everything that I did musically, so to speak. Imagine that when the landlord came, he spent a few thousand dollars to renew his apartment, and he came to get his first pay rent, and he sees everything painted like that. I thought he was going to throw me out, and I said, wait. I did my first reading. And his name is Michel Malaco, which is the president of the French Gourmet in California, French restaurant Gourmet. And I used to be his general manager before this UFO experience happened. And then I was so precise to all that transpired in his life when I did his first reading. And he's still my best friend. And he never fired me, so I stayed in his apartment. And of course, now someone else is living there, and they probably repented everything. But it's to tell you,
it had quite an impact on you. All right, we have a telephone call, so let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello.
You're on the air. Your first name and from where are you calling?
My name is Joshua, and I'm out of Port St. Lucie, and it's not my first time having brief conversations with Dr. Turi.
Okay.
Essentially, I had just a simple question. I've been interested in pursuing information and knowledge about astrology and looking for a place to start.
Well, basically, what you can do is to download my free books and get a test of astrology. But you have to remember, I redesigned astrology. Nostradamus, 500 years ago, didn't have a watch or a computer, so I had to redesign a software that puts everything in perspective using the dragon, which is Ophiuchus, obviously. So I would start by reading some of my books, or maybe listening to a show like with Kevin. I have tremendous amount of radio and TV show. You can watch me, hear me on YouTube. I'm all over the place. So you could start by acknowledging some of my predictions. And when you're ready, when the student is ready, the teacher will be there for you. Then you could become a student of mine and take the course at home, and I'll be there to help you.
I think I've had a relatively basic understanding of the houses and the planet transit through the houses, but I've always been a little bit lost when you bring up the topic of the constellation Draco. I'm not sure at all where that comes from.
Well, again, you have to remember, Nostradamus didn't use the same calendar, didn't use the same methodology, and modern astrology nowadays is more astronomy. I remember when I was invited to teach at the American Federation of Astrology in Florida, every single room was overloaded with mathematical jargon. Astrology is an art demands intuition, metaphor, and using the signs. And modern astrologers have lost the use of the signs. So by rekindling, by order of the extraterrestrial, to actually rekindle Nostradamus astrology is what I do. So you will have to start from the beginning, and all your wisdom is not wasted, and all that you're going to learn with me will be more power to you and will add to your own repertoire of wisdom. So be patient, investigate me, and as I said, when you're ready, take my home course, and I'll take care of you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, now, Joshua, where did you say you're calling from?
Port St. Lucie in Florida.
Ah, okay. Thank you very much. Good to have your call. And the telephone lines are open. Let's talk about that for just a minute. Now, you provide a course in what you do. You provide that how? Online?
I do have that online, but this is an old course. The last time I taught was in Sedona, and it's kind of a very, very easy introduction, which is also advanced, where I teach about the dragon, the hidden dragon, the new housing system. I mean, you're talking about 6 or 7 hours a day for 6 or 7 straight days. So by the time you're done listening to 16 CD, watching all the DVD, reading all my books, you will build cosmic consciousness. But again, it's very important for people to realize that because of those UFOs interaction and me rebuilding Nostradamus astrology, cannot be compared to modern astrology. That's why when you graduate from my course, you become an astropsychologist, not an astrologer. And that will give you tremendous opportunity to add this wisdom in every affairs of your life. Like I teach my students, everything under the stars is controlled by the stars. So if you understand the dynamics of the cosmic code, you have answers to what it means to be human in every area of the human experience. But again, that's me to know and the listeners to learn.
What would you say? I mean, it's quite easy, really, for us to imagine what would be some of the benefits of that. But let's talk about that. Why would somebody want to go through this and to learn this? What's the benefit to them?
Good question. If you go shopping and you see the red light in the street or the stop sign, will you stop, Kevin? You bet you will stop. You have to respect the laws of the physics. Now, because you do not know about the laws of the divine, the laws written in light through the sign by God himself through his creation, does not emancipate you from penalty. So what, knowledge is power. Ignorance is evil. That's what it comes down to. The humanity has not yet been taught how to understand the faith and the truth of God in reference to what the Bible says. I talk to you, you won't hear me. I present myself to you, you won't see me. One has to raise his cosmic consciousness, understand the true faith, the true tools of God through his celestial design, and then by respecting the laws, their life would be better. Why do you think the world is so chaotic? Because the laws, the spiritual laws, are totally messed up. Humanity and science has made a tremendous, tremendous progress technologically speaking. We went on the moon, we have GPS, we invented the internet. But when it comes to the spirit, you're stuck with 875 different religions where everybody is killing themselves because their God is not the same than yours. That's not how God intended to use his divinity. But, I mean, you're talking about 2,000 years of wrong information, deception, and the result is terrible, and is the chaos that we are experiencing nowadays. But it's part of my prediction, of course, that the age of Pisces, which regulate the Middle East, deception, illusion, religion, this entire energy is being replaced by the age of Aquarius, which is humanitarianism, which is a new communication, the truth. So this age of Pisces and deceiving energy and all these religions produce the implosion of the Middle East. And now we are moving towards a very interesting area as we approach the year 2012 that will make people more tuned to the vibration of the age of Aquarius, which not only will stimulate the acceptance of the cosmic code, but the reality of extraterrestrials. You're talking about some very, very incredible time. And I am here on the forefront trying to make people aware to respect the laws. If you do not respect the laws written by man, okay, you're going to pay the penalty. And again, would it be science or would it be religion? They would never give you the golden keys what it means to be human. However, if you understand the laws of the divine and make the effort to raise to a higher vibration into that Aquarius energy of being curious, then you will get answers in knowing when or when not to do things. Because, and that's where you need to be very, to have attention, Kevin, they are no accident at all. Okay? Just circumstances that are not yet understood by science and humanity at large. I'm ahead of time with this. Thanks to all these UFOs, dramatic experience, which I can refer as being either a gift or a curse. I don't know anymore. It depends on your perception of it. Okay? But the result is real. The reason why I'm able to do what I do is because I have full awareness, full cosmic consciousness, and I respect the laws. This is why I will do things on a very specific time. Setting up, I'm sure you heard of this kid who got killed yesterday, this motor racist kid, okay? He is one of these kids who does not know not to take chance when the moon is waning or when the moon is on the tail of the dragon. There is people out there that are throwing conferences, that are meeting with the government, that are gathering people in the middle of the desert in Arizona. Next thing you know, they are burning, they are dying. And these are supposed to be the people that have cosmic consciousness, that know better than you. They don't have access to those rules.
Okay,
it's so very important.
We need to go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Jerome.
Dr. Torrey, we're happy to have you on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first wife, are you still in touch with her?
Oh, yeah. Well, she's my best friend. She, of course, has been traumatized by the entire deal here, but she has been watching everything that transpired since we met. And she sees my progression, she understands my mission, and as I said, we are very good friends. That's it.
Well, I'm happy to hear that you're still friends with her. About the Nordic, do you know where they came from?
Who?
The Nordic.
The Nordics. Well, you know, there is a hierarchy of extraterrestrial, my friend. And they all have a very, very serious purpose, and that's to make sure we do not mess up this world, okay? okay?
And okay, they are the first guys, ones. We have to step away for break. Both of you hang on. We'll get right back to where did the Nordics come from right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Dr. Louis Turi, and we're on final approach. We only have a few minutes left. Dr. Turi, I had to cut you off in mid-sentence there because the break was taking over, so the microphone is yours, and Jerome is still on the line with us from Pennsylvania.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. Now, Jerome, first of all, you could speculate you know, they could be coming from the Pleiades, the Seven Sisters, the constellation of Taurus. But what I know, what they told me, what they downloaded me, is that every single star that you see above your head, and God knows it's infinite, every one of them supports life. But not life as you can conceive it, see it with your human senses. Understand that. Plus, extraterrestrials are very, very concerned to make sure that we do not do anything wrong. This is why I call them more the gardeners of this world, okay? In so many ways, the purpose is very clear. They are looking for how can I put it to you in a more simplistic way? Okay, let's say you want to start a chicken business. You're going to take the best chicken you can get, male and female, so you're going to get the best egg possible. Do I make sense? That's what they're trying to do. And they told me when they built this solar system, this particular solar system, they made sure to do it around the biggest planet in our solar system, which is, of course, Jupiter. Because Jupiter, gravitational forces are so strong, they will stop anything, including element, to come to destroy this world. So this is why it's called the Great Protector in Greek mythology. And this has already been proved with the Shoemaker Comet, who fall in pieces before hitting the Earth. So when you have this talking head, conspiracy talker, with unconscious people that tells you this world's going to end because of a comet, well, rest assured, this will not happen, and you can thank the ETs, and you can thank Jupiter. Okay? As far as the moon is concerned, she was brought from Jupiter with very precise nuclear atomic precise explosion, not to destroy it, but at the same time with enough force to remove it from Jupiter gravitational force, which is extremely strong, and bring it to this solar system they were building. That's why the moon is like a golf ball and the Earth has just a few craters, nothing very serious when you look at it. There is purpose behind this magnificent work that they did. And we are very close to finally the full acceptance, at least to the public at large, that extraterrestrial and UFOs are very real. Of course, the government knows. Of course, they do know. But putting out into the light will offend the status quo and all the religious junk that's going on out there. So when you look at it, the purpose is very real. Extraterrestrials are very real, and they are here not to eat us, not to make us work to dig into gold, or to have a secret station on the moon to control us. No. They're doing a work. Before everything is together, if we do something wrong to this Earth, it will affect other world, and that means they have failed on their agenda and their mission. Their biggest agenda is to keep repopulating place far away in all the universes with the best of the best of the element of humanity. And I guess I'm a chosen one. Now, you can be also a chosen one if you raise your vibration, bring up your magnetism, exercise, eat decently, bring up tremendous knowledge, then there will be very interest in you and your progeniture or your children. And that's what happened to me. That's what I gather as far as I can understand.
Well, I like your analogy that that they are the gardeners of this world, because I think we have so much corruption and evil forces in this planet that we really need some outside gardeners to do some weeding.
Exactly. Now you have the gray that do the cow cutting. They are taking care of the food supply. They're doing the analysis. They are flying the saucers. But I'm telling you, there is a big hierarchy over there. And all they have as a goal is to improve the standards of humanity and get the best from this ground and then populate it out there.
Dr. Torrey, please make another visit to the Kevin Smith Show. And Kevin, could you repeat his free offer that he stated earlier?
If you go to his website, up in the upper left-hand corner of his website, there's a link where you can download two free books. So everybody needs to do that. It's drturry.com. Turry is T-U-R-Y. And
T-U-R-I.
Now you can just click on his picture on my website and it'll take you over there as well.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right, thanks for the call.
Thank you for your support, my friend. Bye-bye.
All right, we are just about out of time, and I want to ask you very quickly, you do not seem to have bought into the idea that 2012 is it, that no. It's over.
No, 2012 is a golden door. As we are moving into the age of Aquarius, which will give humanity the opportunity to realize again that conspiracy promoters, religious leaders that are promoting the apocalyptic time, when everything is said and done, they will realize that they need to readjust their thinking, they readjust their learning process, and will not follow whomever is out there. So I don't know if you remember the year 2000 or the Y2K.
Yeah.
I got so many calls, Kevin, and I was saying to everybody, just relax. Comes the next day, California will still be here, and your computer will be turning on. I'm saying the same thing with the year 2012. If there is a change, if the change is actually coming and is already in progress, it's going to be a spiritual elevation of the human spiritual perception of the divine, where religion slowly but surely is losing ground and where curiosity will lead people to understand a little bit more than what science and religion want them to accept as reality. So there is a lot of judgment to do, a lot of reevaluation to do, and we are moving in that direction. It's all good, indeed very good. And this is why I choose the day after as Dr. Turing Universal Day of Reasoning.
Well, you know, I have said here on the show that I think the significance of December the 21st, 2012, is that it's the day before December the 22nd. That's it.
I like that.
I'm having a party in Bangkok, Thailand on December the 21st. They get to December the 21st a day ahead of the United States. So we're going to usher in December the 21st, 2012, with a party in Bangkok, Thailand, and then on December the 22nd, I'm going to do some last minute Christmas shopping with my wife. But I'd like to invite you to be present at the party.
You bet, I'd be there.
All right, if you will, Dr. Turry, just stay on the line with me for a moment. We've got to bring this one in for a landing, but it's been great to have you with us, and I do hope that we can have you back again real soon. But just stay on the line with me. I want to chat with you a moment after we go off the air. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening. I wish we had more time, but we don't have more time. And I hope you've enjoyed our time with Dr. Louis Toury. Click on his picture on my website. It'll take you to his website. You can download 2 free books. And that's a great opportunity, and we appreciate him for offering that to you. Remember, if you are not a member at the Kevin Smith Show, you're missing out on about 80% of what goes on here. It's always free to listen, and it will remain free to listen. But, you know, you could watch the show, and you could get in on the forums, the chat, have your own blog, your own photo album, your own video album. You know, there's just tons and tons of stuff there. We want you to join, and I think it'll be good for you if you do. My friends call me Steeleye. My enemies do, too, and you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.